Howdy. Give me just a moment to swallow my last bite of what I sadly called breakfast this morning. But thanks to J.J. Solomon, my brilliant producer over here, who ran one extra promo that allowed me to finish that mouthful of protein bar and nuts so that I can spend some time talking with you. I normally, not that you'd care, but I don't normally start my day eating a protein bar and nuts. I normally eat what we lovingly call glop at my house. Because you see, Pernilla, my delightful, lovely wife, makes homemade yogurt in which she puts whey protein, brewer's yeast, this green powder that's got chlorella and a whole bunch of the cool stuff in it, blueberries, many we grew, and various other sundry things in there. And I'm telling you what, that's a breakfast of champions right there. Boy, that is supercharges you. So this, I was choking down a protein bar during the news and thought I could get through the whole thing anyway. But we're here now, and that's all that matters, right? Okay, if you would like to weigh in, you have a couple of ways to do it. We can get downright conversational if you want to. At 800-905-0989, that's the WRD talk line. But that same thing, of course, is our text line. So since by and large people now prefer to text, not many people do talk radio the way we used to, which was talking. So here we go. Texts we'll start with. Trust has been eroded by the realization that we have always been fed propaganda and manipulated by governments and the elites that control them. And I would certainly say that is correct. Tony, tell the audience that for truth on news and media, check out the Epic Times. You aim into that. I love the Epic Times. Great. In fact, since you brought up the Epic Times, let me share something interesting with you from the Epic Times. Not only do they have a good honest take on news, they have fascinating articles that have to do with health and other things. So I find this an interesting one. In fact, it ties in with my guest that's coming up in the next segment, Michael Thompson. So they've done a study, and they found out that faith, the brain, are interconnected, and faith turns out to be the forgotten dimension of health. I say this from a very openly Christian worldview. So we live in a time of antidepressants, more therapists, and all of a sudden brain chemistry is being studied like it never has before. Well, a new peer-reviewed study published in the Journal of European Economic Association examined long-term trends in religious participation and morality across the United States, and they found that states with the most significant declines in church attendance between 85 and 2000, also experienced significantly greater increases in so-called deaths of despair, suicide, drug overdoses, alcoholic liver disease, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So the point here is that what they're discovering is that your spiritual health matters so profoundly that it can actually affect your clarity and your brain. And basically, if you think about it, and this is from the article, you can look at all health problems across four interconnected dimensions. They actually have a name. It's called the ACEs model, which stands for anatomy, chemistry, energy, and soul. Okay. So, of course, your health is your body, your bones, your joints, chemistry, your metabolism, biochemistry, and so forth. And energy refers to regulation, communication within the body and the nervous system, and so forth. But the soul represents meaning, conscience, purpose, moral orientation. It is the inner driver of us. And now neuroscientists are finding that those with the best spiritual health have clearer brains, better impulse control, emotional regulation, and much of this is because of prayer. Because what does this do? It gives us moral self-reflection. How does How do we feel about ourselves in light of our faith and who God thinks we are? More importantly, who do we think we are as a result of the fact that the Holy Spirit literally resides in us? With that comes what? Authority? A tapping into power? Peace? There are so many benefits of faith. But what's interesting about the article is that they're literally able to find this out scientifically. And I'm saying to myself, well, I knew that. But it's pretty exciting stuff. Something good to think about. Let me see here. Trust has been completely eroded. Okay, I read that when I read them. Okay. I know. Okay. Well, I've already read all this text, so I won't read that again. I would like to give you something positive. And well, it's positive in a way. So we live in Greenville. Do you know that the London Daily Mail and Fox News wrote articles about Greenville this week? Here's the headline from Fox News. The South Carolina community becoming a housing hotspot. Greenville listings 22.4% up over the year. Okay. So homebuyers are flocking to Greenville. Oh, isn't that wonderful? Well, yes, it is. If you're selling a house, buying a home, and we're glad to have you. Don't misunderstand. Because if just an idea in comparison, America's number two home builder announced this week, that's Lennar, they are being forced to slash the cost of houses by 10% because in much of the rest of the country, the real estate market is in the toilet and people are afraid somebody's going to flush the thing. It's not real cheery. Now, will that change? I think it will. We look at what's happening with jobs. Oh my gosh, the job numbers were incredible. I don't know whether you knew this, but we gained 64,000 jobs in November. Unemployment rate, 4.6%. So I have hopes for the economy. I think we all do. But the reality is it's tough. So I guess the overarching point I'd like to make is if you don't thank God for anything else today, thank God that you're here. There's no place else I'd rather, you'd have to extract me with dental tools to get me out of here. And I'm from Texas, and people say, well, don't you miss Texas? And the answer is no, I don't. I've been here since 92 when I came to work at Channel 7, and I absolutely love it, and you should too. And we welcome all of you who are coming here. Just don't bring your dang blue politics with you, if that's okay. Stick around Michael Thompson, the brilliant author, up in the next segment to talk about how can we fix men's spiritual. Howdy, howdy. Welcome to a new year. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. So in an earlier segment, if you were listening, we were talking about, among other things, what is happening to our country demographically and the feminization of our country to a large degree by the left. And no time in my life have I ever seen men so under attack, so vilified, and particularly young men. And it's the result of what many things. Third wave feminism is a great part of it. You can go back to the Great Society and Lyndon Johnson and look what happened when he came up with the whole welfare thing. We went from 80% of black families had two parents to 21% do now. Which means an awful lot of young men. JJ, my producer, JJ Solomon, who's a black brother, was talking about, particularly in the black community, he has seen this himself. And in the last segment, we were talking about how spirituality literally can heal the brain, how important this is. Well, there is a movement underway in this country, and it is being fueled largely by some great writers like Michael Thompson, who is my guest. Michael, I'm so glad you're here. Let me tell our audience a little about you, if you don't mind. So Michael wrote a book called Heart of a Warrior, another one called King Me. And Michael, you started an organization called Zoe, and the whole point of your organization is to try to help young men reclaim their manhood in Christ and understand who they are. So I'd like to start with this. First of all, describe, if you will, because I loved your book, what the point, the overarching point you make in your book, Heart of a Warrior.
Good to be with you, Tony. Happy New Year, man. And thanks for those kind words and introduction. As an author, I would say that Heart of a Warrior is an expression of my journey, first of all, and some factors and pieces that were really critical to my faith journey. And so when I wrote about the need to be a beloved son before you really enter into the fray of the spiritual battle, those were huge. Those were huge initiation parts of my life that God was taking me into. I had to go back in my story and in my life in order to really go forward. And the things that God wanted to address in my life, especially on my particular masculine journey, as every man is on one. Yeah, there were some things that just needed to be recovered. There were things that needed to be learned. We all as men have been trained somehow in a variety of different ways, from culture to our families, the households and the homes, and how we grew up, what we saw in a man, our fathers particularly, and some other men, coaches, teachers. I'm 61, so grew up through the 80s, late 70s, 90s, married in 90, and just honestly, Tony, there was most of the training in being a man from men was haphazard, if I could say, maybe even unintentional. And so, those are just this conversation, obviously, in this exploration is quite complex because there are a ton of variables.
One of them are
some of the reasons why I wrote Heart of a Warrior, was coming to see some of this at 38 and 40 and recovering a lot of masculinity with the help of the Trinity.
Let me enter into this with a question. You mentioned culture in something you said earlier, and I think you'd agree that never in certainly my lifetime have men been so marginalized and so vilified by our culture as they are today. And part of this is because so many men now, I'll give you an example. I was ministering a music at a men's conference a few years back, and the speaker asked, how many of you had a good relationship with your father? Maybe 15-20% of the hands raised. One of the things that's missing, and this is what your book addresses so beautifully, is that men who didn't have a good relationship with their father, don't really have a context, if you will, for being a man,
right?
To start with.
Yeah. 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 I think it was Eldridge, who phrased it something like this in his early 2000s when Wild at Heart came out, that, one of the challenges we face in masculinity is we're unfathered men, and therefore we're unfinished men. And so part of the crisis that you're putting, on the table has fatherhood in it. It's a variable. And how 20%, that's not good for us. Right. And so we're ill-trained, we're ill-equipped. As boys on a masculine journey, becoming men with masculine hearts and a unique way that we bear God's image, how do we move forward in strength and kindness to play our part in this story?
Well, let's talk about Zoe, which is the movement that has been born and is growing as a result of your writing. So in practical terms, in simple terms, talk a little bit about how you actually began the process through your Zoe gatherings.
Yes. I mean, one of the really significant beginnings was, like I said earlier, my own journey. I was in a place where I was asking the questions, I think, Tony, you know, men come to markers, you know, 30s, 40s, and particularly in that range, we find a lot of men asking some of the same questions. But from my own journey, that's when some of the remodeling, remaking, restoration of God really was critical, and found myself, you know, turning to the church, turning to faith, walking, you know, in a lot of spaces to try to bring more and more clarity. But to be honest, there wasn't great answers there either. There was a little bit. There was a Promise Keepers movement in the 90s that was pretty significant. Wild at Heart came along, but for me, exploring this and with other men, you know, we've become friends. And but earlier in my timeline, there, you know, Tony, there was other men that were also exploring and wanting to be better men, and so we were a bit of a band of lost boys, but we were very intentional about recovering something that we felt like was told to us is available. You know, what a good man is, what a good man does, what does this look like? And so there were some voices and some environments that were really, really helpful in those, I'd say, early 2000s. And at the same time, as you mentioned earlier, that's when kind of the toxic masculinity conversation began to really turn up and heat up as well. So, and it makes sense if you adopt, I think, a spiritual warfare in a spiritual realm, physical realm intersection, that, of course, is the voices of restoration and recovery for masculinity begin to move in some good directions, and so does
Michael. We're up against a break. Would you be kind enough to stick around for another segment?
Sure. Love it. Yeah,
okay. We're talking with author Michael Thompson, who wrote Heart of a Warrior and King Me and others, and we're going to get into some practical things that help men figure out who they are in the culture that we're living in. Tony Dale sitting in for Tara. Don't go away. Howdy, 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 and welcome back. And so if you've just joined us, we've been talking with author Michael Thompson, who has written a couple of fascinating books, Heart of a Warrior and King Me, and others as well. But he's also part of a movement called Zoe, which is basically trying to help men rediscover what it means to be a man in a spiritual sense, in a godly sense. And we live in a culture, one of the texters wrote, enough with the religion already. Not all conservatives believe this stuff. Well, that may be true, but not only men have been under attack, Christianity is under attack in our country. So it's about time that we who profess this faith have the intestinal fortitude to say, hey, hang on a second. This is the truth, and speak truth in love, which is what we're doing. So part of that truth, Michael Thompson, is that men right now are marginalized in their own mind to thinking less of themselves. Their culture tells them, particularly young men. And one of the fascinating things, I know statistically, I didn't bring the story in, but there was a fascinating story, Michael, I just read this week, and I forgot to bring it in my show prep, about the tremendous movement toward faith in the Gen Z community, mostly with men, but now women too are starting to do it. So let's start with what you're seeing with the younger cohort of men.
Yeah, it's another wild and expansive idea But nonetheless, as you're saying, what you're saying is true. We're seeing increase in numbers. I think that there's some deep things in image bearers that that God put in us, and I believe that every generation it needs to and will, however derailed or wandering they might be. I think every generation, Tony, is going to have to find the gospel for themselves, and they are going to look to, you know, their parents' generation. They're going to look at church or religion or faith journeys and what they saw there and was modeled for them. And particularly, it's interesting that this this generation is going to some of the more orthodox spaces where, you know, we've had such a movement in church for seeker churches and wonderful expressions on evangelism and discipleship ministries even outside the church that have excelled at that. But I think just to observe what's in front of us, as you were saying, that they seem to be looking for the order, looking for the structure, looking for liturgy. You know, old hymns rather than worship songs are finding their way into this exploration of this generation. So it's very fascinating,
Michael,
what you're talking about.
Okay, so let me delve into this. I said in an earlier segment, I was talking about one of the greatest gifts you can give another person is your undivided attention to listen. Part of what you guys do, which is interesting to me, I had a grand relationship with my dad. I had a man I could go to who would speak into my life, who I listened to. You have something called, I think you call them elder sages. So you, mm-hmm. So essentially you are training older men who have wisdom, godly yeah. wisdom, to be there to listen to these men who are trying to actualize mm-hmm. themselves as men mm-hmm. and give them the benefit of the godly wisdom that I got from my father.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm so happy to hear about you and your dad, and you've shared some stories with me, and that unfortunately isn't the norm, and yet I'm so thrilled to hear that. And so, what you're describing in some ways is generational. This is the structure that God made when He made a family, and tons of passages we could dive into, but really the Proverbs is a great example of a homeschool curriculum, right? for David and Solomon and then his sons. That's how it opens. And so it's a generational thing. And when we have real challenges in the family over the last 40 and 50 years in marriage and in the structure of that, that's another one of the variables, Tony, of, you know, what is it? How is it affecting the generations behind it? So the Elder Sage Initiative is, yeah, men in their 60s and 70s, you know, getting invited back onto the field and back into the game and in a way that could be impacting to the generations under them. And not, like you said, not so much telling younger men what to think and feel, but being willing to listen to where they are, see why they think and feel the way they do, and yes, potentially even guide them to the kind of validation and initiation that the Father God is offering. Father is the name. It's the wildest thing, you know, that God chooses capital F Father to describe the way that He wants to relate.
Well, let's
the relationship He's inviting us into. So.
We only got a couple of minutes here.
Yeah.
But I want, okay, so you have one of your people from your Zoe organization that's going to be speaking at an event that's happening on January 17th up in my yeah. neck of the woods called The Forge, which is a really cool event for young men. They're going to do a giant bonfire. They collect Christmas trees and all this. But tell me about basically what Josh is going to talk about.
Yeah, this is just one of those events that comes on our calendar where men can gather and talk about what it is to be validated, initiated by God in the masculine journey. There'll be some wonderful men there from some different ministry expressions and missional organizations. And so there'll be several hundred guys. There'll be, I think it's 400 and something Christmas trees they're going to light on fire. It is a huge event. But yeah, I think it's just events and environments like this, Tony, are really important. And to, to have men gather and then explore together from a variety of generational spaces, cultural spaces, racial, and all the kind of different spaces that you can imagine, but common ground being masculine hearts and masculine journeys. So,
well, Michael, we're down to about a minute. So I want to, so tell them how they can learn more about Zoe.
Yeah, go to Zoe, Zoweh.org, Zoweh.org, and that's the address. That'll get you in a lot of trouble.
But there are good podcasts on there. Books
podcasts,
are great.
Devotionals. Yeah, we've all been publishing stuff on YouVersion Bible app, men's devotionals, 18, 19 of those now. A lot of different encouraging resources, but also relationships, you know, because it's relational.
Amen.
So to connect with us and let us connect with you would be an honor.
Well, Michael Thompson, go out and get his book, Heart of a Warrior or King Me, all great stuff and much needed stuff in this time when young men and older men too need to be reminded of who they are. God bless you, Michael. Keep up the good work.
Blessings, Tony. Thank you for your time, man.
Thank
it's
you.
An honor.
Thank you.
Happy
as
New
well.
Year.
And the bonfire we were talking about, you can find out more about that by going to Forge Men's Ministry. You can find the website on there. Where do I have that? I'll give it for you. I'll give it to you in the next segment. I'm running out of time now. So stick around. More coming up. Tony Dale sitting in for the one and only Terra Servatius. Howdy, welcome back. Before we move on, I did want to give you this event I was talking about happens up where we are, up in Rutherford County, Polk County, right up in that area. It is really cool. They gather hundreds of Christmas trees, and among other things, there's axe throwing and archery and food and music, and somebody from Zoe, Josh, will be speaking. I plan to be there myself. So if you go to info@theriverministries.com, if you want to go do something that's really different, it's on the 17th of this month. And as I say, so you can download a reservation, find out more about it. But I just thought, you would think that's kind of cool and kind of different. And let's look, it's easy sometimes when in talk radio to get caught up just talking about the current events, which is certainly important. In fact, as an example of this, in the next hour, I do want you to look up, to stick around for this if you possibly can, because Tom Siomades is one of the brightest economic minds I know of. He's a chief market economist with AE Wealth. We're going to talk about where things might be going with markets and the economy and that sort of thing in the next hour. Stick around. But let's go back for a moment and talk about where we might be headed in a larger sense based on where we have been. Part of my job, at least the talk show part of my job, yes, Common Sense Retirement Planning is, my day job, but, my background has indeed been the media for years before I started doing that. And I love doing this. So I read and do research that every day, 2-3 hours of having to read the outrage du jour, as I've come to call it. But one of the things that I have come to realize is there's certain thinkers and writers that consistently write things that are just so good. And every now and then, it's interesting, I first found out about Victor David Hansen from Rush Limbaugh, who would often read some of his writings. But he wrote something that I think is so appropriate as we begin this year. I want to share it with you. And the title of it is, Can the Dark Ages Return? He writes this: Western civilization arose in the 8th century in Greece. The Roman Republic inherited and enhanced the Greek model, and for a millennium, the Republic and the Empire spread Western culture. Until the collapse of the Western Roman Empire in the 5th AD, and what followed that was a second European Dark Age, roughly from 500 to 1000 AD. Finally, at the end of the 11th century, the old values and know-how of the complex world of civilization began to reemerge, a slow rebirth, which energized people and science returned, and then we had the Renaissance, the Reformation, and eventually 200-year European Enlightenment. And now, contemporary Americans do not believe that our civilization could self-destruct a third time in the West, followed by a brutal dark age? Would this happen? What would cause these prior returns to tribalism and loss of science and technology and the rule of law? Well, like societies, they age and complacency sets in. So the hard work and the sacrifice that built the West created wealth, leisure, all that affluence is taken for granted by later generations. And what created success is eventually ignored, even mocked. Child rearing, traditional values, strong defense, love of country, religiosity, meritocracy, and empirical education, they all began to fade away. The middle class, autonomous citizens began to disappear. And tribalism, that pre-civilizational bond based on race or religion or shared appearance, began to reemerge. National governments fragment, borders disappear, mass migrations start unchecked. Currency inflates. It loses its value, its confidence. That was life as it was back in 450 AD. The contemporary West? Are we not seeing similar red flags? Fertility has dived below 2 in Western countries. Public debt nearing unsustainable levels. And yet, the reading and analytical skills of average Westerners and Americans in particular are declining. So, in these times of relativism, where we're replacing absolute values for eerie replay of the latter Roman Empire, where critical theory claims crimes are not crimes, or critical race theory postulates that all of society is guilty of insidious bias, ask yourself, where might we be headed? And today, ask yourself a different question. Is it safer to walk in New York City or take a subway now than it was in 1960? Are high school students better at math than they were 70 years ago? Are movies and television more entertaining, ennobling than in the 40s or 50s? A nuclear, two-parent families, are they the norm currently as they were in 1955? And he ends with this: both the medicine for decline requires unity, honesty, courage, and action. Virtues which are now in short supply on social media, amid popular culture, and among the political class. That's pretty much what my overarching dialogue, some might say diatribe, this morning has been. Trying to speak truth, and I will tell you, as I look at some of these texts, I get some pushback from some of these people. Don't want to hear it. One of the earlier texters was accusing me of the conservative echo chamber. But here's what you have to understand. We really are, as we begin the year 2026, at an inflection point in our country. We've had 1 year of Donald Trump, and I read the statistics earlier. When you take a look back, not at what the mainstream press tells you, but what he has actually accomplished in 1 year's time, the undoing of the absolute horror show that he was left with from the Biden administration, the 9% inflation, the dramatic increase in debt, the importation of the third world in our country and giving them free everything at taxpayers' expense. All of that has been stopped or is in the process of being stopped and repaired. But look, it takes time. And it's the one thing that the press is counting on. Short attention span. If they can just convince enough people that the affordability crisis is all Donald Trump's fault and we've got to get rid of him and we got to take over the Congress and we've got... No, that is not what is underway. What's underway is an opportunity. And if we'll just stay the course that has now been set and trust that, we will have a far greater outcome than we would have if, God forbid, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, Mr. Minnesota fraudster, had been elected. Can you imagine if there's nothing else to be thankful for at the beginning of 2026? Be thankful for that, because we have three more years to begin to repair all of the holes in this boat, that ship of state that have been put there by the left. We have a real opportunity to right the ship and avoid that giant iceberg we were headed for. And we aren't just rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. We're fixing the boat and changing course. Thank you, Captain Trump. Anyway, more to come. Stick around. We'll talk about what's happening in the economic future when we come back. Tony Dale in for Terra Servation.